You're listening to Hartery Humble.
Welcome, welcome to episode 3 of Hard to Be Humble, hosted by the humblest man on earth, yours truly, Tommy Stickle. Thanks so much for joining us today. I'm excited about the show we've got for you today. Should be good. I'm excited. But I want to start out first with telling you a little bit about my day today and pinpoint something that I think is we all can relate to. It just struck me the wrong way today. So my family decides, hey, it's kind of hot outside. Let's go to Sonic drive-thru and get some slushes, get some good food, have a good time at Sonic. So you pull up to the little, what do you call it, drive-in, I guess, and you push the button, and of course the person says, hey, welcome to Sonic, can I take your order? And you go through your list, you know, you tell them, I want my lemon berry slush, I want my hot dog, I want my corn dog, I want my french fries, I want my onion rings. You give them everything, all right? It's enough food to feed a whole family, okay? You're spending plenty of money. It's all there. And then why is there always this pause after you do that? And the conversation always shifts. And I always feel like, you know, the person talking to me just shifts their attitude completely and turns into, you know, like the Italian, you know, like the Godfather. And they always say, let me make you an offer. You can't refuse. Would you like any mozzarella sticks or cheddar peppers? It's an offer you can't refuse. It's no brainer. Just take it. And I'm like, no. I just ordered 16 things off your menu. No, I really don't want cheddar peppers. No, if I'd wanted them, I would have said it when I was ordering. I had it very well spelled out for you. You're not going to convince me. Why is this in your manual that you have to do this? It makes no sense. Why do they turn you into Godfather figures and pressure me into getting mozzarella sticks that taste terrible? Just stop. Well, anyways, that's one thing that just kind of got at me today, the old Godfather Sonic. But got some good stuff coming up for y'all today. Got a phone call with Chad, the infamous Chad. I guess he's really not infamous yet, but hey, he could be one day. Got a segment on John Chavis, as well as plenty of the other news, and got some new segments to reveal as well. So thanks so much for joining us, and let's get on with the show.
Hello.
Hey, Chad. How's it going, man?
Tommy Stickle. I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm doing quite well. What's going on? What's new?
I'm on week 4 of paternity leave with the kids, so surviving, but it's good on a muggy night here in Northwest Arkansas.
Beautiful. Yeah, enjoy those weeks while you got them. Use that free time off. It's awesome.
Absolutely.
Well, hey, I'm calling you today because I've got a topic I want to talk to you about, and I think you've got some great insight into this, and it's the very controversial, highly, maybe it's not controversial, honestly, but throw in the A. Brett Bielema's crown jewel that he wanted to implement along with the triple O woo that no one uses. Throw in the A.
And Haganese.
Yeah, and Haganese. Yes, that term. So, yeah, throw in the A. So I wanted to ask you a question at first. Okay, first off, you live in Northwest Arkansas. Do you see anyone throw the A in the wild, you know, out and about town? Do you ever actually even see it?
I have never seen it actually happen. I don't live in Fayetteville, so I live north of Fayetteville, but I have not even had a football game. Any kind of game, I have not seen it occur. And for me personally, I never caught on. I never bought on to it because I didn't go to a college that had a fraternity or sorority, right? Obviously, that's where it started from. It wasn't Greek club. We had our social clubs, right? So, but obviously, that's where it came from. His wife was in a sorority that did a similar thing. So she said, hey, let's just make it into an A, too. And so I think he wanted her to feel welcome. And they, so I, maybe that's why I don't get it. But I just never understood it. It's like, where is the right time to throw the A? Like, outside of Instagram, you know, Twitter posts, like, is there any appropriate time to throw the A?
That's a great question.
I'll let you answer that. But I'm going to throw it. Well, I'll save my story to you. I'll let you answer that. And I have a funny story about that as well.
Yeah. So when can you throw the A? Like, do you throw it in an Alabama fan's face? No, you would never do that. Cause they'd be like, stop. You're annoying. You're an idiot. Would you do it after we win? No. Like, there isn't the only time that I actually have ever done it, and normally it's only if I have enough time to do it, because it takes a little while to get your, you know, bunny ear fingers crossed up. But sometimes, you know, I'm living here in Tennessee, so when you see somebody with the Arkansas Razorback license plate on the front of their car, you always get a little excited. And the only way that I can communicate back to them if they don't see my license plate is to give them some kind of signal. And normally, if they catch it, you do some kind of wave or nod, you know, you give acknowledgement. But I have thrown the A, and I don't even know if they've ever thrown it back, to be honest. But I do it sometimes to them.
What percentage of fans actually understand when you throw the A at them, actually know what you're doing? Like, is that their first instinct of, oh, he's throwing the A, or, hey, what's this guy doing? Like, if someone threw the A at me, I don't know how I would respond personally. I would not throw it back.
Great question. And is there anything worse than when, like, you know, the high school kid is visiting the school and he's trying to throw the A because he thinks that's the appropriate thing to do, and like he touches the tips of his fingers together instead of overlaps them, and you're like, is that a diamond or what are you doing? Like, we don't even know how to do it.
And then, yeah, you just so anyway. Having said all that, back there in the Bielema era, I did, during Twitter, I had an account, and I followed Brett Bielema, and he retweeted his wife throwing the A at a restaurant, right? So I guess that's where you throw the A, is he was excited about Arkansas and threw it at a restaurant. And so I said something stupid like, hey, you know, I look forward to when we just all stop throwing the A, you know, just something stupid like that. Nothing offensive, nothing just out of line. That night, I think like 4 hours later, blocked Brett Bielema, immediately blocked me. No response. I know that's happened to a lot of other people.
Man.
But I guess it's a sensitive, it's a touchy subject.
Man.
Touchy subject.
You would think that he would have enough on his mind, a person making millions of dollars coaching a football team, enough stress and things going on outside of that to not care about not even like a super egregious, like, mean tweet. It was more just like, yeah, this is kind of whatever. I don't really like this. That's basically what you said to him. Blocked. Like, right. And you're a fan. Like, it's obvious you're not, you know, like an Alabama Crimson Tide as your picture or something like that. Like, okay, well, maybe block that, whatever. But knowing that you're a fan, like, what in the world? Like, grow some skin. It is weird.
Yeah, it was weird. I was taken aback. I will say this. There was one acceptable time where I thought throwing yay was actually cool. Alex Collins scored a touchdown. It was the bowl game in Memphis, Liberty Bowl. Mm. And he scored a touchdown. We had the cool helmets on. And he threw the A. And I thought that was cool. Like, I thought, but that was the only time I ever thought it was cool. You remember that?
Yeah, I do. I do. I that's probably acceptable. I'm okay. I feel like if the football players want to do it, it's okay, but I really think it's gonna die. Maybe I'm wrong there, but I don't think I've seen it in a while. And my guess is Chad Morris might even not like it or want to kill it. We'll see. I don't know.
Yeah, I have not seen it. To answer your original question again, I have not seen it. I have not done it. And so I haven't. Someone may have actually thrown the A to me. I just maybe ignored them, but I'm not looking for it. But I hope it does go away.
It probably
will. No offense,
will.
Brett, if you're listening.
I think it's I would absolutely love that. I would absolutely love that. Okay. Well, I have one other thing I wanted to talk to you about. You know, it's recent, I think, sad news. I'm going to label it as that. I don't know if I feel that personally feel that sad about it, but you never like somebody getting dismissed from a team. I don't think we know why, but obviously I'm alluding to Gabe Osaboyan. I think that's how you pronounce his name. Gabo, as everyone refers to him as. Mm-hmm. Getting dismissed from the team, maybe there was some, maybe he wanted to leave. I doubt it. I have no idea. I can only speculate, so I probably shouldn't because that's not fair because I don't know. But anyways, right. What's your thoughts about Gabo no longer being on the team and what the upcoming season might look like without him?
I'll admit, I got in the Gabe train. There was a couple game stretch where his hustle plays were really exciting. He would take a charge at the right time. He'd get a rebound at the right time. It was exciting. We weren't very deep last year, so he actually had to play some minutes, and he somehow. And let me preface this too. I don't mean any of these comments like in a negative way. Like I kind of related to this. We all have that friend or family member that we love and we even like to be around, but at the same time, it just drives you nuts. You know what I'm talking about? Like, we all have that friend, we all have that family member, and they're so annoying. But like, you sometimes even miss them when they're not around. Mm-hmm. And it's like that person. And I feel like Mike has so many of these individuals. And I love Coach Mike too, but I feel like he had a lot of these players that you love them and you miss them sometimes when they're not on the court, but when they're on there, they just drive you insane. And it's like Gabe banks in a three and you're like, oh no, that's like, it's a sigh. Cause like, he's going to pull again if he gets the ball.
Yes.
It's just those players that it's like, and I don't know that I felt this way. Like, I mean, the others that come to mind are, like a Landis Harris, obviously Gabe. Yeah. It's those guys that they're just out of control. Ja'Cory Williams.
Williams' story was he would make, some kind of nice drive to the hoop, maybe slam it, lay it off the glass, and then he would go down the other side of the court on defense and immediately foul the ball carrier. That's Ja'Cory Williams. Great play, terrible, stupid play. So inconsistent. And those, it seemed like Mike Anderson always had one guy that was the inconsistent, just great play, horrendous play.
Yeah, there were just too many of them. They were good athletes. I mean, I feel like Kai Madden sometimes had that too. But and with Michael Sanchez, was he a Mike Anderson guy or is he Pelfrey? Maybe before him, but I'll say this. Gabe, we'll miss his heart, I feel like, out there, but we won't miss his 17% 3-point shot. We won't miss his 40% from the free throw line. If you don't have a guy out there who can score, who's a liability on offense, I feel like you're getting better if you're, and I feel like with his transfers outside of, he is having tryouts, next week for a walk-on. I don't know if that'll be an improvement or not. Considering going, not ruling it out, but
knowing what I've seen from Musselman, I think there's 0% chance that he gives a scholarship to any walk-on ever. I just don't think that's how he views it and how he treats it. I think it's the politically correct thing to do, but there's no way that he's going to give a walk-on a scholarship unless it's just some ridiculous person that somehow is on
camp.
It's just not, he values them too much, like he said that he views all the scholarships like the way a professional basketball team is run, where it's like a contract. Yeah. And you don't want to lock someone up to a long-term contract where you don't know what you're going to get in return for that.
It's a feel-good story, but at the same time, like, we're not Johnny Holmes. I love Johnny as well. He's fun. He's fun when he gets out there and the crowd goes crazy and we're up 20, it's a three. But, like, that's not going to win you championship.
No.
Johnny Holmes a scholarship.
Yeah, just flash to Johnny Holmes listening to this podcast being like, what the heck? Why are you talking about me?
I love Johnny Holmes.
Everybody did. That was a tough move. Musselman did that pretty fast, He's a fan favorite, And to just nope. You're no longer on scholarship.
It was a cool
buddy.
Moment when he got his scholarship, too. That was a really cool video. But same time, like, he's got his eyes on, this is how we can try to contend for an SEC championship or a Sweet 16 that we haven't been to in a very long time. So we're not going to get the Sweet 16s by giving Johnny Holmes and a scholarship and playing Gabe and he played in pivotal moments, like down the line in the stretch of a game where like they're fouling on defense to send this to bonus, and they're just singling out Gabe.
Yes,
you know? That's not how you get there. So no. I mean, we'll miss his hustle, but I think we can find somebody to fill that gap and actually hit from the free throw line. So.
Yeah, I think I have faith there. I have trust in Musselman. I think he's going to do the right move, but we'll see. You know, all we can do is speculate. We never know. We might get here and really miss him, you know, at the start of the season. Yeah. And if so, we'll do some kind of lament together about missing him and make fun of ourselves for being not too sad about him leaving now.
Absolutely. Yeah, well, I appreciate your time, and let me be on the show.
Absolutely, man. I appreciate you. You have a great rest of your night. Enjoy the steamy Northwest Arkansas air. Enjoy the remaining days you have of paternity leave. And, you know, I'm sure it'll just keep getting busier from here. So just soak it in.
Yes, sir.
Take a breath. Have a good night. And I'll talk to you later, man. Thanks.
Sounds good. Whoopee.
So in our first big topic of the day here, I wanted to discuss something that's been on my mind a lot lately with the Arkansas Razorback football team, and it revolves around Chief John Chavis. It hit me to just start asking the question, is the Chief, John Chavis, still top dog? You know, does Chief still got it? That's basically my question. I know he's had a lot of success throughout the years. I know he's won national championships as a defensive coordinator. He's been a defensive coordinator in the SEC for many, many, many years. And as you can imagine, you know, sometimes you have your best when you're younger, and sometimes, you know, I guess you can get better as you age. But is Chavis past his prime? Is he still Chief? Well, let's just be honest. He's always going to be Chief. But is he still an elite defensive coordinator in the country, let alone the SEC? In the offseason last spring, he opted into his contract extension, which increased his salary to $1.5 million a year. And that sounds like a lot, to be honest, if you're not familiar with the way coaches' salaries go. But that probably puts him right around the top 10 in assistant coaches in the country. There's still some defensive coordinators that make north of $2 million. But still, to be in the top 10, you should have really high expectations placed on yourself. I don't think it's a mystery here that our defense wasn't spectacular last year. The first year he had with us, it wasn't terrible. It actually was better than the two previous years, but basically what I did was I set out on a journey to record a bunch of stats all through John Chavis's career, all the way back from when he first became a defensive coordinator at Tennessee, all the way through last year, 2018, at Arkansas, and just look at the trends. Look at each year, what numbers increased, what it looked like, and just see if anything stood out to me, to see if there was any trends that I could spot or anything that really seemed interesting. And I will tell you, there was one specific thing that stood out to me when reviewing all of this data through the years. When you look at Chavis's defenses, I think you see a lot of turnovers. That's what you see a lot of. I feel like he prides himself, and that's what he's going after, turnover, turnover, turnovers. And when you look through the years, before last season, he never had a season where his defense got less than 9 interceptions, and by and large, they had way more than 9 most years. But he did have 2 seasons that his defense has had 9 interceptions. In those 2 years that happened, the first was the year 2000, and the team actually went 8-4, so he only got 9 interceptions. Tennessee was 8-4, not terrible. The other year was Tennessee's 2005 season, and in that year, Tennessee went 5-6. So that is actually one of John Chavis's worst years, win total-wise, as a defensive coordinator, was that 2005 Tennessee season where he went 5-6. And I think that one could make a story here that those 9 interceptions could have played a role into why that team was so bad. Just to place it into context, last year, Arkansas had 5 interceptions, just 5 interceptions. That's by and large the lowest he's had. When you look at John Chavis's defense's average interceptions throughout his entire career as a defensive coordinator, they average 13.7 through the years. And obviously, Arkansas being at 5 is very, very low and really stood out to me as I was entering in this data. Even at Texas A&M, he had 11, 12, 10. But that 5 really makes me think there is big room for the secondary this year to step up. And I guess you can also get interceptions from linebackers. Plenty of people can get them. But I think the story here is the need for improvement in the secondary. I think we're going to be just fine in our defensive line, in our linebacking core, you know, barring a bunch of injuries. But the secondary is really where we need to step it up. And that is what I'm going to have my eye on this year as I'm watching this Razorback team. I'm going to have my eye on how many interceptions we get this year. You know, after the first couple of games, we need to have at least a couple, I would say, just to show that we're making improvement there. And a lot of other stats, we're not too off what I would call our norm. For instance, last year, the opposing team averaged 413.2 yards a game against us, 413.2. And that number seems kind of high to me. I actually did some research. I was just curious to know what, you know, what was the average across all FBS teams of how many yards per game they got. And the average was actually 405 yards per game per team. That was the average when you look at the whole FBS. So, you know, if we're allowing 413 yards a game and the average team is getting 405, that means that our defense is, you know, below average. And of course, all this stat stuff, you know, you can take any stat and tell just about any story you want. But it's just interesting. It shows you a lot. And then when you look at our number of yards we've allowed, you know, the past few seasons, actually 2 years ago, we allowed 427.5 a game. The year before last, we were at 438.4. And then last year, we were 413.2. So we did actually see a little bit of improvement there, which is good. Our interceptions went down from in 2016, we had 9, 2017, 8, last year, 5. So again, that interception total really sticks out to me. Another kind of interesting thing that I saw with the data when I was pulling it all up is it's interesting how last year's defensive numbers actually mimicked in a lot of ways Brett Bielema's numbers that his defense put up his first year that he went 3-9 in. The average total defensive yards allowed by that 2013 team was 413.4 yards a game. And of course, if you remember, last year we were 413.2. So very, very similar numbers there. The completion percentages by the quarterbacks, very similar. In 2013, it was 64.9. Last year it was 63.4. Again, very similar. We had 8 interceptions to last year, 5. One thing that we actually did do a lot more last year was have forced fumbles. It seems like clearly John Chavis is good at teaching teams to force those fumbles. So I anticipate that continuing into this year as well. I don't think that's going to drop off, but man, those interception totals is really, to me, the key, the one piece that we can glue our eyes to and really see if this defense is getting better. I think that this team, just trying to think of good benchmark numbers to see if we're making improvement and actually putting up numbers worthy of that salary. That's how I would phrase it. You know, I don't expect us to go out next season and, you know, drop from 413 yards a game down to like 350 or something like that. That seems a little bit, you know, too far in my mind to jump to. But I think if we see a jump to 375 yards a game, that would be really good. In fact, we haven't been that low since 2014, where we had that triangle of Trey Flowers, Darius Filon, and Martrell Spate. That year, we actually had our lowest yards allowed per game this decade, with 323.4 yards a game. And if we all know, our record really wasn't that great that year. We went 7-6, but our defense was really, really stellar that year. And I wish that we had the offense that year to actually win some more games. It was not our defense that year that was holding us back. It was the offense. So just looking through John Chavis's career, you know, his best years were certainly at LSU from 2009 to 2014. He had some really stellar defenses during that time. And it made me think, you know, the lack of his good defenses lately at Texas A&M and Arkansas after those years, you know, when everybody knows that LSU is DBU. I don't think I'm going out on a limb of saying that. They have really good secondary and defensive backs. In fact, during his 5 years there from 29 to 2014, they had 8 defensive backs drafted to the NFL. And just to put that in context of what Arkansas has had, we've only had 1 defensive back drafted since 2009. So even in a greater period of time than those 8, just in those 5-year periods, Arkansas has only had 1, Tevin Mitchell in 2015. So you can tell that that is a position that we have not had great talent at. And I feel like that is what we really need to begin seeing on the Arkansas Razorback football team to really see our defense start, take that next step. And I honestly think that we have some freshmen on our team this year who are going to make some improvements in that secondary. I really think that Jalen Catalon at safety is going to be one of those guys that, as long as he doesn't get injured, I think he's got NFL potential. I definitely think he's going to make a name for himself with the Hogs. We also brought in Greg Brooks Jr. as well as Devin Bush, and I think both of those guys could have really good careers with us too. So I'm actually pretty encouraged with the freshmen that we brought in this last recruiting cycle. And I think that we're going to see an uptick in the play there in the secondary. So far though, in our 2020 recruiting class, we don't have much in that position. And that kind of worries me. I really hope between now and signing day that we pull off some magic here and continue getting some good secondary players, because we need it. We need it bad. We need to establish ourselves. I think once we get those players in, and with John Chavis running the defense, I think that's going to be the magic key that unlocks this defense and really gets us to something special. And now I've got something special for y'all. The first ever sponsor of the show, El Guapo's Mexican Restaurant. Enjoy.
Yes, come on down to El Guapo's, where the food is sought daily on all your favorite Mexican dinners, like tacos, burritos, and even guacamole! Hey, we have a special on the number 2, each Tuesday from 2 to 4 p.m., guaranteed not to let you down by Wednesday, if you know what I mean.
El Guapo's does not claim to diagnose, treat, or cure any known diseases.
Let's all go to El Guapo's. Hey, I'm in a rapper's mood.
Moving on to Arkansas news of the week. Let's see, there's actually not a whole lot of new stuff out there, but pretty much the main stuff is injuries right now with the football team. So we recently got the sad news that Deion Stewart, one of our most veteran wide receivers, is out for the year now with a torn ACL. I believe they are actually going to try to get him a 6th year through a medical hardship. So we might see him again, but if not granted, you know, we might miss out on that senior year for Deion Stewart, which is always very disappointing. So far, we've also lost one other player out for the year, Noah Gatlin, an offensive lineman, which is also a pretty big blow. Other guys who's also had some injuries that aren't quite as serious, but Austin Capps and CJ O'Grady, they're still recovering from, I believe, some minor knee surgeries. I don't think that they are expected to miss much game time, if at all, so they should be back for Portland State, but nothing too serious there. We also have Jordan Jones and Eric Gregory, who have had some high ankle injuries that they're recovering from. Again, you know, it's maybe 4 weeks, you know, 2 to 4 weeks recovery timeline there. So nothing too serious. Ultimately, through fall camp, you know, you hate hearing the season ending news for Deion Stewart and Noah Gatlin. Another report that I saw that I thought was actually kind of interesting and kind of neat was a little video where some media members asked, I don't even know what they asked, but they got Eric Musselman talking about the basketball team, and he had this really funny quote, or at least I thought it was funny. He said, "When I wake up at 3 a.m, my wife asks if I'm going to be going to the bathroom, and I'm like, no, I'm trying to figure out how we're going to get defensive rebounds." I thought that was a really neat little quote he had there. I think we all can relate to waking up and in the middle of the night like that. You know, that obviously should be kind of alarming to us as Razorback fans, right? You know, he's worried about our defensive rebounding situation. He says, you know, he remarked that the team was not tall and not big, but we don't, I guess, have that true center or a guy who's truly going to be a big man this year. But he just spoke about how it's going to have to be team effort this year. And he specifically mentioned a guy like Jimmy Witt, who rebounds really well for his position, and other guys who are going to have to step it up at their positions and become really good rebounders. He said that they were going to emphasize that with drills. And, you know, he was like, you can only get so good doing drills during practice. But he's definitely concerned about it, which, you know, if he's being vocal about it, I would much rather a coach share that than not and have us see that ourselves. Not giving him a pass for that, that's not what I'm saying, but the fact that he's saying he's obsessing about it enough that it keeps him up at night, that's almost kind of comforting to me in a way. I just think that's neat. So heard that report, saw that video this week, and thought it was kind of cool. I had a little fun this week and actually asked some Twitter polls to the audience that are following there, and wanted to share some results there. So one of the questions I asked, okay, we got to set the record straight. Your favorite Arkansas player name on the team currently? And we've got some good ones. So I threw out there Scooter Harris, Busta Brown, Sosa Ageem, and Bumper Pool. And as probably fairly predictable, with 60% of the vote, Bumper Pool won the best name on Arkansas Razorback team. It's an amazing name. Actually, I think the coolest name is Busta Brown. That name is amazing. But hey, y'all have spoken. Bumper Pool it is. Another question I ask is, which running back you think will have the most rushing yards this year? And, you know, of course, probably the two primary candidates for that are Devwall Whaley and Rakeem Boyd. And pretty resoundingly, the crowd thinks Rakeem Boyd. The audience thinks Rakeem Boyd is going to be the one who has more rushing yards this year. And I think that that is absolutely possible. And, you know, it's so hard to say. It will be close. You know, a lot of people commented on that and say it's going to be close. It could be really close. I hope it's like the two-headed monster kind of scenario where you have, if one, basically they both work in tandem where, you know, one guy starts it out and the other guy comes in and breaks the run and vice versa. That's what I'm hoping for. Of course, we can always harken back to D-Mac and Felix years and think of that two-headed monster. You know, I don't know if it'll be quite that great. That's probably a little bit wishful thinking. But honestly, for some reason, I'm feeling like I want to go a little contrarian here and say, I think Devwall, it's his last year. I think he might have more rushing yards this year. You know, the story seems to be that he's gotten hurt a lot, and I just feel like he's got a lot left in the tank here for his senior year. So something just in my gut is telling me, go with Devwall this year. He's a senior. Rakeem's got one more year left, and hey, it is what it is. I'm going with Devwall. Whaley is having more rushing yards this year, mainly just because he's got 1 year left, he's got a lot left in the tank, and I think he's just going to show it this year and ball out. And next up, I want to debut a brand new segment this week, and it's going to affectionately be called Razorback XO. Cue the music. What I'd like to do with this segment each and every week is highlight one player from offense and one player from defense throughout the entire year. So I've thought very, very deeply about my selection today on which player this podcast is gonna love so deeply throughout this season. So without further ado, here are those Hogs. First up, offensive player. And with that, I'm going Rakeem the Dream Boyd. Now you all know Rakeem. He had a very entertaining first year with the Hogs. Now, you know what? Enough of this. Alright, you all know Rakeem. He had a great first year with the Hogs. He did some pretty special stuff. He showed a lot of explosiveness. He was just really good this year, and I can't wait to root for him this year. I think we have other running backs that are going to be awesome as well, but man, Rakeem, he has a special place in my heart. I can't say it any other way. He wears number 5. That's a special number for a running back. I'm really excited to just see what he can put out. And it's crazy because I was thinking this was going to be his senior season, but he's actually got a whole nother year next year. So, man, we get 2 more years of Rakeem, honestly, unless his season this year goes that good. And he has that talent. But, if you don't know much about Rakeem, obviously he played last year, so you can remember him running the ball. But he also made a name for himself by going to Independence Community College and being on the Netflix documentary Last Chance U. And if you've ever watched that documentary, I would highly recommend it. I think it gives an awesome picture into what it's like being a football player that I think fans need to see. I think it's important to see what it's like in the work they put in and what they have to deal with. And it's neat. It's a neat show, but Rakeem has a really cool story that they highlighted in season 3. And to be honest, it just really kind of, I kind of sound a little wimpy saying this, but it honestly really did touch my heart. And I'm sure he's so sick of people bringing it up to his attention because he cries on the show talking about his dad and how his dad hasn't come to any of his football games. And, you know, I haven't heard any kind of update since the show to know if his dad is watching him at Arkansas at all. I would actually love to know that. But bottom line, I just think this guy's really special. I really like him. And he is who this podcast is going to love this year. And now for the defensive side of the ball, I'm actually choosing a true freshman. I kind of wanted to dig deep for this one. I didn't necessarily want to choose the obvious people that I think are going to have great seasons to highlight, but I really think this guy is going to surprise some people. And I believe in his talent and I believe in his work ethic. And man, I'm excited about him. So I chose him as the Razorback to follow this year. And that is Matteo Soli, true freshman. And I don't even think he's going to be a starter at the beginning of the season. I think that there are older guys on the team that will probably get that spot above him. But I guarantee we will feel his presence this year in games. This dude is going to be a monster. He's a sack machine. My in-laws are really big Georgia football fans. Not UGA fans. They're actually big Georgia Tech fans. And because of that, I'm able to talk to my father-in-law a lot about football that's going on in Georgia. And high school football in Georgia is a big deal. It's up there with the way that it's treated in Texas. They pay attention to that. And I can tell you that Matteo made a name for himself in Georgia State high school football. As a senior at Douglas County High School in Douglasville, Georgia, he, from his defensive end position, had 84 total tackles. He had 60 of those were solo and 29 tackles for loss. That's pretty awesome. He also had 22.5 sacks in 4 quarterback hurries. And Matteo's 22.5 sacks as a senior last year actually got him 9th in the nation for most sacks by a high school player. So that should just tell you what I'm talking about here and why I'm excited about it. He's a machine. He's going to be a beast. His dad played at Arkansas. His name was Junior Soli. He earned all SEC honors during his collegiate career with us, and that was from the 92 to 95 years. And he was a nose guard and was drafted in the 5th round of the 96 NFL draft. So his dad knows what's up. He knows what it takes to be a pro, and he's instilled that in his son. Matteo actually picked Arkansas over, the cream of the crop schools, to be honest, over Clemson, over Alabama, over Auburn, over Florida, Florida State, Notre Dame, Stanford. He had them everywhere. Every college program in the nation knew about this guy and knew how good he was. I really think there's not a lot of buzz about him at this point. I think, though, there will be. I think he's going to make his presence known by the end of the year, and I feel like I'm kind of going out on a limb choosing him because there might, there's a fear that he might not ever even get into games. He's not even a starter at this second, but I am going out on a limb and saying he will eventually become a starter this year, or at least play significant snaps and will make impacts. He'll get some sacks this year, and I'm excited. So he will be one of two Razorbacks that this podcast just loves, adores, and becomes the biggest fan for. Hope you enjoy the segment. All right, folks, and the final topic of the day, as always, is our famous Arkansan of the week. And I'm actually going to eat some humble pie here as well in this segment too, because after releasing, you know, my Hog Mount Rushmore in the last episode, I had some conversations with some people, and I think you can make a case for a born and bred Arkansan who might also should have been included on that Hog Mount Rushmore. It's hard to replace any of my choices there with this person, but he certainly earned his spot there, and one could easily make the case to put him on there. And I think, if nothing else, he at least needs a statue in front of the Hog Mount Rushmore, if nothing else, if not having his face carved on it too. But the person I'm highlighting today for the famous Arkansan of the week is Brandon Burlesworth. And as most of you already know his story, you know, a tragic one for the Razorbacks, but also one that's truly incredible and a really neat story. So Brandon was born in Harrison, Arkansas, September 20th, 1976. And, you know, he was just a normal guy, lived a normal life, graduated high school in 94 from Harrison High School, and actually walked on with the Razorbacks that following season. So after joining the team and redshirting his freshman year, he really started to reshape his body, lost some bad weight, gained it all back in muscle, and just continued and continued each and every year to get better and better and stronger and stronger. And by 1998, he came all the way from being a walk-on to being a first-team All-American, which is incredible. It's an incredible feat, and very, very, very few people have ever done that. And after that senior season in 1998, he actually was drafted in the third round by the Indianapolis Colts. And tragically, 11 days after that, he died in a car crash in Arkansas, kind of going back home from Fayetteville after some workouts. His death had a lasting impact on many people in the football program, and he has a legacy that still remains today. After his death, his family and some friends established what's called the Brandon Burlesworth Foundation. And what it is built around is his work ethic and his Christian values. And it's a neat organization. It gives underprivileged kids around the state a chance to attend Razorback games. They also get a chance to go to Indianapolis Colts games. And it just helps them grow and mature and know Brandon Burlesworth's work ethic and Christian values. And it's a neat foundation that was set up just in honor of him and the way he lived his short life here on earth. As many of you probably also know, he also had a book and a movie made after his life. I actually haven't seen the movie or read the book, but that's definitely on my list. Hopefully I can one day. But this guy was truly an inspiration to so many people and made a huge impact. He had a very infamous look with his black rimmed glasses and is a neat, very amazing guy that we can celebrate as a true Arkansan and a famous one, and one that we can certainly be proud of. Thanks so much for listening today, guys. As always, it has been an absolute pleasure to host this episode for you. It's always so much fun. Please go to Twitter and follow the podcast at @humble_podcast. I'd love to keep that Twitter account growing and have a lot of fun in there. If any of you ever want to be heard on the show, there is an option to go to anchor.fm/hardtobehumble. It's linked in a lot of the bios around the social media platforms. There's an option in there that you can send me a voicemail message. I believe you can do a max of 1 minute recording, and I would love to hear from you. I've kind of tweeted out a few opportunities for people to share their thoughts and opinions. Haven't had anyone take me up on that offer yet, but I'm telling you guys, if you send in a voicemail message, I would love to include it on the podcast. So definitely hit me up. Do that if that's at all interesting to you. If you want to hear your own voice, hey, let's do it. And I guess that's all I have for you today. But as is a custom around here, I want to leave one final message to all you amazing fans out there. As Mac Davis taught us so long ago, it can be really hard to be humble, especially when you're an Arkansas Razorback fan. Thank you so much and have a great week.